So let's talk about the previous 10 years. Denver has seen incredible growth. At times, estimated 500 new people a day arriving. The new growth was mostly white, displacing and outnumbering the ethnic diversity that preceded it. The growth was so fast, the city government could not keep up, and new arrivals placed a great strain on the city's infrastructure. The Highlands had become one of the most highly sought-out residential destinations, property values skyrocketing. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the 10 years prior to the church starting in 1892. This list of things I just read to you come from a collection of histories of North Denver, and that's actually what the 1880s were like in North Denver. Sound familiar much? That was the reality of Denver when this congregation began. I tell you, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The Methodists had come early to the Colorado Territory. The Methodists and those seeking gold and silver in the hills had violated treaties made with the indigenous people of the area. Even so, crossing those lines, beginning to set up camp, and then following the camps came the camp meetings and the congregations. As Denver started its journey from the early 1850s through 1892, actually our starting year is the end of what they call the beginning of Denver. As Denver became known as the Queen City of the Plains, over the course of its first 35 years, its populations spilled out into what then were known as the suburbs. Suburbs like West Highland. The Methodist leadership in Denver recognized that there were needs in these newly developing suburban areas, specifically children who were needing to be taught in Sunday school and adults who needed to gather in prayer. It was those two groups that actually outgrew the front rooms of the houses they were meeting in, the back room of the grocery store that sits, there's actually a house right at 33rd and Perry. You can still see the word grocery gently painted on the side of its brick right across from Edison Elementary. The prayer group used to meet in the back storeroom of that grocery store before it was a house. And as the groups got too big for those little spaces, they decided they needed someplace new. And well, the Barrows family opened the doors to their barn and said, "Why don't we gather here?" The barn that stood across the street from our sanctuary entrance, now that nice little white condo building, that's where they gathered to teach the children and to pray for the community. And on July 22, 1892, that group officially became Highlands Methodist Episcopal Church. Now, one of my favorite quotes from an early district superintendent was that Highlands began just as Jesus did, in a stable. And it was one of Denver's most promising suburban appointments. I tell you, throughout its 125 years of ups and downs, that has remained true. The promise this congregation has carried and carries was not dependent on attendance numbers or bank balances. Instead, the promise this congregation carried was a promise of relationship and intention and grace. Those three words are the ideas I find best summarize the Methodist story. Relationship, intention, grace. They are also the qualities that have been foundational to the 125 years of building a home where all belong. I invite you to visit the history room. Open any of the scrapbooks or any of the boxes of memories. Read through the newly expanded history narrative and you will find these three attributes wherever you look. Relationship. Intention, grace, our relationship with our neighbors, our intention to be continually reaching out, and the presence and embracing of God's grace. These things are the heritage of Highlands. And they are a heritage that goes far beyond our own time. When John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, was at the near the end of his life, he realized that Methodism would outlive him. This was actually a bit of a surprise to him. He had not intended to start a denomination, but it occurred to him that he did. And he began to wonder what it would look like once he couldn't be the one defining its method anymore. He thought about the people called Methodist and who they might be. In fact, he wrote an especially beautiful piece called Thoughts Upon Methodism. And in it, he said this: "I'm not afraid that the people called Methodist should ever cease to exist in Europe or America. But I am afraid lest they should only exist as a dead sect, having the form of religion without the power. And this undoubtedly will be the case unless they hold fast to both the doctrine, spirit, and discipline with which they first set out. The form of religion without the power. John Wesley believed, and I agree, that there is a fate far worse than a church having to close its doors. That's a church to have doors that are open and maybe even people in the pews, but having a message and a meaning that is empty. And the way to avoid such a fate is to hold fast to what has always been the doctrine, spirit, and discipline of Methodism. To hold fast to relationship, living with intention, and sharing in God's grace. Though these are not exclusively Methodist traits, when describing the character of a Methodist, John Wesley said, "A Methodist is one who has the love of God shed abroad in their heart by the Holy Spirit. A Methodist is one who loves God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. A Methodist is one for whom God is the joy of their heart and the desire of their soul." To which others around him said, "Shouldn't we all be doing that?" And he said, "Yes! This should be the character of all who seek to follow Jesus." In fact, what he's quoting there is the character of a Methodist are the very words and invitation of Jesus in the Great Commandment to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor and neighborhood as ourselves. And those who would follow Jesus have been trying to live such a life ever since. When the Apostle Paul wrote to a faith community in Ephesus, a place he had spent some time himself, he recognized this character of following Jesus would be an ongoing challenge, something they would have to work on every single day. It was a process. And in Ephesians, Paul writes this prayer for them. It's found actually just after the verses that inspired our phrase, "building a home where all belong." You find this prayer to the church. "I ask that God will strengthen you in your inner selves from the riches of glory through the Spirit. I ask that Christ will live in your hearts through faith. As a result of having strong roots in love, I ask that you'll have the power to grasp love's width and length and height and depth together with all believers. I ask that you'll know the love of Christ that is beyond knowledge, so that you will be filled entirely with the fullness of God." This is how we keep from being empty. We fill our lives and our faith community, this church that we are a part of, we fill it with God's love. The qualities that have carried our congregation these last 125 years are the very qualities that kept Methodism alive and full of power, as John Wesley called it. They're the very qualities that led the early faith communities like Ephesus and others to become centers of Christian life for their surrounding communities. And they are the very qualities that Jesus asked us to live. This is our heritage. And I'm very intentional in not naming it our history. For our history is past. Our history is what has been. Yes, we have a history, but this is something more than that. History, if we're not careful, can become the form of religion without the power. A story of what we were. What we have is a heritage. Something that is passed down, entrusted to us as an inheritance. Something that is valuable, meaningful, and alive and dynamic. It guides us, not by limiting us to what has been, but it guides us by offering us values that help us know who we are as we take new steps and add to it. The imagery of building a home where all belong was also inspired by Paul's writing to Ephesus, and it reminds us that we are in our moment of something much bigger. Hear these words from Ephesians. "That's plain enough, isn't it? You're no longer wandering exiles. The kingdom of faith is now your home. You're no longer strangers or outsiders, for you belong here with as much right to the name Christian as anyone. God is building a home, and God is using us all, irrespective of how we got here, in what God is building. God used the apostles and the prophets for the foundation, and now God is using you. fitting you in brick by brick, stone by stone, with Jesus as the cornerstone that holds all the parts together. It's taking shape day after day, a holy temple built by God, all of us built into it, a temple in which God is quite at home. Hear that promise. Now, in this moment, God is using you. There have been countless everyday saints before us, generations of people who called Christianity home, who called Methodism home. Today we celebrate those who have called Highlands home. And each and every one of these people added to what God is building. And when they reached the end of their time, they lovingly and faithfully handed the heritage to those who followed them. This is one of the reasons we were intentional in making Anniversary Sunday and Confirmation Sunday the same day. It is a reminder that there are those coming before us who God is already using to build a home where all belong. God's already at work within them, and someday they will inherit what God is building through us. We'll let it go, and they will carry it forward. You know, someday we, all of us, all that we are doing in this moment and others, we will be but a brief footnote in the next chapter of this congregation's heritage. It's a reminder that we in this moment are not the pinnacle. We are not the full fruition. We are not the capstone on what God is building here. There is so much more to be built. This is our moment. And I give thanks to God that there will be generations of moments to come. And when those generations look back at our page in the scrapbook, on a shelf in the history room, when they go in and dust off a box labeled 2017 to find stories for some new pastor's sermon on the 250th anniversary, may they find in all of our doing, may they find in all of our being, may they find the relationships, the intention, and the grace that carries with it a heritage worthy of our lives. A heritage that grasps love's width and length and height and depth. A heritage that defines our character through love of God and love of neighbor. May they see clearly when they look at our moment in this timeline. May they see clearly that God was working through us to build a home where all belong. May that be our heritage. Yesterday, today, and into every single tomorrow that is to come. Amen.